This is week four of this series on Daniel, and it's interesting because, and I go back to the picture that I took, and I said originally it was at Holland. It was actually at Grand Haven in the Grand Harbor. But, you know, I just am amazed at that lighthouse, at however it's been engineered, how it takes the abuse on such a regular basis. And next week I'll try to remember to, I want to include a picture just so you can see, because, like, that was the first day we saw it. The next day I went back. I actually rode my bike all the way out the pier to that building, which is like, it was amazing because it was just a sea of glass. And I just think it's a great metaphor for the story of our lives. And then even the beauty, like I shared at the beginning, of just watching the Hall family lean into this transition in the journey that they're walking through and the beauty of that. And I know we all face death in a different way. But when you're confident, and you can even lean into, like, the song we just sang with the kids, that if you have a confidence in there, we really shouldn't be afraid of anything. And so this story with Daniel, and it's like, I don't know how long it's going to take us to get through the book, because here it is week four, and I'm only in chapter two. But it's just this idea. And so let me set up a couple things, because I think it's really important, because we've all been given an assignment, right, at work or school that seems like Mission Impossible. In fact, I was going to actually, that was the cue. I didn't put it in, but they had the cue of the Mission Impossible theme song, you know. I mean, I remember as a kid, always on Sunday night, we'd always sit, every week my parents would go, that was the Red Barn night. And so we would actually lay out a picnic cloth in the living room with the big TV. No, not that kind of TV, but remember the old thing that was about the size of a tractor in our living room, and we would watch Mission Impossible. And, you know, you always get at some point the fuse lights, you know, and Mr. Phelps, in a moment, this directive is going to self-destruct, and you are assigned if you're willing to take it. And yet, when you think about our own story, I mean, whether it's the journey the church is on, literally, the season we find ourselves in, it's like, how are we going to get there? How are we going to get there? Or you think about even the journey that maybe each of you are pushing through in terms of just life. And so it's interesting that we need to be reminded that the Babylonian Empire that Daniel's in the middle of, and we saw this in the first couple of weeks, it's a very secular empire. And there's a lot of reading there that I would encourage you to go back and look at, just the first couple chapters, because Nebuchadnezzar is this king, and he's all into astrology and the occult and all this black magic stuff. But it's interesting that we've seen over the last 3 weeks that Daniel has found favor with the king, that God's invited him into a place of authority that we need to pay attention to, because wherever we find ourselves, God places and uses us in a way to engage us. And if you'll remember, the last couple weeks I've had this, I don't have it in your notes, but I talked about this idea that God tests you with stress before he trusts you with success. That in order for us to get through, sometimes you've got to get through it before God will bring together the things that he wants us to see. And how we do that and how we pace ourselves is really, really important. And so over these next few weeks, we're in week four, we've got a few more weeks ahead of us, we're actually going to look at nine different ways that Daniel leaned into a messiness, if you will. And so today we're looking at the fourth test of Daniel's character. I mean, the first week we talked about the fact that the Israelite Empire was gone, Babylon and the Babylon Empire rose up, and so the secular nature of the nation was very apparent, and it was not godly, and so there was a major change culturally that came that way. And then, if you remember, the story of Daniel was peer pressure, that this idea of he was being brought in and to be indoctrinated, and then he was even being challenged by his faith, is what we talked about last week. And so this week is a really crazy story, because we're only in chapter two, and there's this moment where he's going to really be tested, and we're going to see how God shows up. And I just want to sort of go right. So, you know, you could go read it yourself, chapter two, but it's messy. It's complicated. The king has a dream, and here's the short version. The king has a dream, and he needs somebody to interpret it. And so in the interpretation, he wants somebody to come and tell him what he dreamt. Well, you know, that's a problem, because if you didn't know what he dreamt, how do you tell him? And so he reaches out for the astrologers and the black arts guys, and none of them are able to do it. And yet, it's interesting, because this is where Daniel comes in. And so this idea, sort of unpack it even more. So King Nebuchadnezzar has a recurring dream, and then he challenges his royal advisors. And his advisors fail, and he decides to kill them all. That's in verses 10 through 13 of chapter 2. And then in verses 14 through 30, Daniel intervenes to interpret the dream. And then the rest of the chapters where God gives Daniel the meaning of the king's dream. And then the king, because of what Daniel tells him, actually honors Daniel and gives him an even higher authority within this secular culture. So we're looking at the fourth test. And so really, this idea, what do you do when it looks like it's mission impossible? You pick it, whatever. And so what I'm going to give you are actually eight really simple things that I've been using like for the last 3 years as I've processed leadership and trying to figure out how do we get there. And so the first one is really, really important. It's just simply this. Don't panic or be afraid. God's in control. That's the first thing. Don't panic. Too many times we want to jump off and go, oh my goodness. It's like, no. No, God is on the throne. The world is turning, and it's in a very positive way. At the same time, if what's happening here, and you can see in verse 14 of chapter 2, if the government, this guy named Arioch, the commander of the king's guard, had gone out to put to death the wise men of Babylon, which includes Daniel. And so basically, what would you do if there was a hit put out on you from the government? This would be sort of unsettling. And it's interesting because what does Daniel do? Daniel spoke to him with wisdom and tact. Daniel didn't lose his cool. And remember, this is a kid who's probably 15, 16, 17 years old when this is happening. And yet he's very confident that, okay, here's what I need to do. I need to talk to the king's man. And so this, again, is a test. And once again, Daniel is all about trusting God. And so my question to you, what are you panicked about today? And again, I can't help but use the Hall family as an amazing example of just the bittersweet nature of journeying with Percy in his last days. At the same time, this confidence that he has been an amazing father and grandfather and has given so much to the community that there's confidence in there. Does that mean there isn't going to be deep emotion in the days ahead? Yeah, because grief is real. Grief is really part of all of our lives. But the way to handle that is to know that God's in charge. And so what are you panicked about today? What is it that it's in your journey right now? What news have you gotten? What friend has told you something that you're not quite sure what to do with? And so again, we start there. That's the foundation for any kind of issue, is that God's in charge and that we shouldn't be afraid or not to panic. The second point is we need to ask why. We need to sort of dive in and learn the facts and what's the motivation of what's going on here. It's real simple. And again, these eight things I'm going to give you are actually things that you can apply in all sorts of other opportunities in your life. It isn't just about Daniel's story. And I think it's beautiful that Daniel's story can actually help leverage us then. When life comes at us, what do you do? And how do you process it? And in this case, Daniel needs to find out the reason behind the request. And is there some emotion involved? What's fueling the fury? In this case, the king was clearly afraid because he kept having these reoccurring nightmares and he's trying to figure out why. Maybe if you're still employed, your boss is under pressure, that you're under pressure from your boss, or he's under pressure. Usually when there's changes within an organization, in terms of management things, it's always because there's metrics and things that up the ladder that are keeping people accountable. And so how do we measure up? And so in some times we take it out on others. And so he's passing on the fear that he feels. And it's interesting, verse 15, he asked the king's officer, why did the king issue such a harsh decree? Arioch then explained the matter to Daniel. Again, we don't have all the influence of what Daniel understood at the time, but it's clear that Daniel said, okay, so I need to understand why this is happening. There's just so many times where we just need to get the facts at any price, if you will. Ask, what do I need to know in order to do this? I say this all the time to folks that, in conversations, I can only manage what I know. I can't manage what I don't know. And so as we journey together, I don't want to be a burden on some certain things, but at the same time, help me understand what it is that I need to know so that I can help you in your journey. Ask what do I need to know in order to do this? And so whether it's the life of the church or it's your own faith journey, whatever it is, it's those things really comes down to that. What do I need to know? And then the third question that I really ask is, to ask for time to get a solution. Don't just jump into it. To actually take a moment to pause. And we're going to see here in a moment that one of the elements of that is actually just to sit and ask Jesus what his opinion is. Actually just sit as we just sang with the children and as we've been using over these number of weeks this idea of who we are in Christ. Do we really believe that we are a child of God? Or is this something that's reserved for our children? Do we really, even in our season of life as mature adults, do we really trust that we are a child of the great King and he wants the best for us? Now, sometimes as we're learning in this series, as we've looked, if you'd look back over the podcasts over the last couple of years, just the journey we're on together is really trying to understand what is God calling us to be individually and what is he calling us to be corporately. You know, in a crisis, the great temptation is to just jump off, to be impulsive. But Daniel knew he needed to spend time with God, and he does that. And it's interesting that he doesn't delay in dealing with the situation. In other words, he doesn't procrastinate. He doesn't postpone. He doesn't get distracted. Daniel courageously faces the fear head on. Back to the next verse. At this, Daniel went into the king and asked for time so that he might interpret the dream for him. What are you procrastinating about because it's scary or difficult? What is it that it's in your own journey that it's like, okay, I need to deal with this, but because of the unknown, I don't want to deal with it right now. And yet, the more you delay in that, the reality comes that you're putting off what maybe could be issues with your health even. Too many times we know too much. At the same time, the doctors can help us if we get in there at the right time, but too many times people want to wait because, like, I'll deal with it over the counter or some other ways as opposed to, no, today it's amazing the medicines that are available to us to make our lives better. So what are you procrastinating about? The fourth point is to actually think about prayer, to actually enlist some friends, and this, again, this is the model from Daniel, to ask other people to come alongside you and pray with you. In the busyness of our life as a church, I know that we don't do that as well as we could. I know when I started here 5 years ago, there was actually a group of people after the service that would gather and would pray over the prayer requests. But just because of the busyness of life, because we're here and there and going other places, that it gets hard to do that. And yet at the same time, we need to enlist that. And so that's where I've taken great joy over the last 12, 16 months that we've leaned into a season of small groups that have been really, I think, effective and powerful in helping people walk in that season. Because even in a small church like ours, we still have to get smaller. And even though I should know everything about all of the 62 people that are active in the life of the church on our, there's 80 people on the roll currently, roughly, it's just I'm not that good. And so together we have to know. And so I love it that as I've made journeys to many hospital rooms, invariably, Margaret Roper is there before me. I know that Margaret's shown up, or she's made a phone call, or she's reached out. And how beautiful that is, because that's the kingdom. And the tension that even Matt has walked us through, that the results of having, paid professional pastoral staff, it gets complicated because we just can't get it all done. Can't be in the community, can't be in relationships with people. And at the same time, that's where we get to lean in and be part of it. Because you see, Daniel was going to pray about this himself, but he knew he needed others to pray. And actually, in Daniel chapter 2, verses 17 to 18, it says, "Then Daniel returned to his house and explained the matter to his friends Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, and he urged them to plead for mercy." In other words, to pray, to plead, to say, "God, you need to help us with this concerning this mystery, so that he and his friends might not be executed." Because they're looking at a death sentence here. I mean, so it's really sort of like, Daniel's like, no, we need to get on the game right here. Right now, this is serious because our lives hang in the balance. Because they're going to wipe out all the wise men of Babylon. And so my question to you is, do you have a prayer partner? Do you have someone that when life is going south, when that tidal wave or the big wave like is crashing on the lighthouse is coming towards you, who do you call? Who do you reach out to? Do you have someone you can go to in that regards? Now, we do at the church. We do have the flock note that we can send out, but still, that's, who do you have that's a physical voice that literally you can call on the phone? And if you don't have someone, that's something that really you need to think about. And that's where your small groups, I hope, can lean into that. And I think it's interesting, too, here that Daniel's concerned about his coworkers. He's not just worried about his own skin. He's actually, again, here in chapter 2, saying, no, he goes back to his house because he knows that we're all in the same mess together. And he knows that he needs to have others around fighting with him and for this. And then the fifth point is to really pray and expect God to show up. There needs to be an expectation in our faith journey that God is going to show up. Because we can see here, there's a couple of verses. First of all, Jeremiah chapter 33, verse 3 says what? Call to me and I will answer you and tell you great and unsearchable things that you do not know. So when you don't know what life is throwing at you and you don't understand why, it's in those moments that we're supposed to call out to God, because he does know. He does know the unsearchable things because he created the unsearchable things. But we also need to do it with faith. And so it's this verse from James. If any of you lacks wisdom, and you should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, it will what? Be given to you. But when you ask, you must believe and not doubt, because the one who doubts is like a wave of the sea, blown and tossed by the wind. And then read with this in yellow. That person should not expect to receive anything from the Lord. Whoa. And, you know, and again, the book of James is written by Jesus' half-brother. And so we need to pay attention to this really seriously, because he's got this thing in a certain way for us to understand in our own journey. It's like, if we don't pray with the understanding that God is going to show up with the expectation, and I'm not talking about the health and wealth kind of prosperity gospel where there are some that, you know, I mean, I actually watched one of the televangelists yesterday make the argument with Inside Edition of why he needed it. Why he just bought Tyler Perry's Gulfstream 5 and why he needed that as a pastor to travel. And it was just extraordinary to me. A Gulfstream 5 is about a $6 million aircraft. And why this path? And it was all because he couldn't be inconvenienced at the airport. Well, okay, we're all inconvenienced at the airport. None of us in this room, I think, have a private jet that we have access to. Although it does make life easier. I've traveled on a few, and there is a beauty in that. But the idea is that we need to trust that God is there in our faithfulness. And I wrestle with the fact that this pastor made the argument that, because I can think what I could do with even $1 million in Mansfield to impact the kingdom, even a tenth of the million, what we could do. And so we need to make sure that we have faith, because in some sense we need to be reminded that God is waiting for us to ask. Again, this sheet that we've read through these last few weeks, and even the song that the kids, I thought it was beautiful that they picked that song, because Katrina said they're singing it in the car and then singing it at home, is to really lean into this. Who are we as a child of God? What is it that we get to inherit because of God's faithfulness? And then the next thing in achieving the impossible is that we need to stop and worship God. And that's probably the hardest thing to do in some regards. The prayer is part of that, but the idea is in the moment, actually, maybe in the messiness of the moment, actually, and I think, you know, the Hall family demonstrated this yesterday when I got there, because they were singing some worship songs. So in that moment when life seems really kind of messy, it's this idea that, you know, we want to sing a great hymn. Joyful, joyful, we adore thee. To be reminded that the messiness that we're going through in the moment needs to just settle out, that God knows the messiness and that God wants to help us in that. Now, there's just three things within that, though. What I want you to see this about worship, because I'm wondering, you know, first of all, part of it is our focus is so much on us in the moment that we really need to get it on God. That whatever we're talking about, that he knows, he's not surprised by anything that comes at us. He's not surprised at all. And so we need to focus on him. And it's interesting, when we look at Daniel's story here in chapter 2, is that Daniel basically spent the night praying and worshiping God. And he was doing that because he was looking for insight. Now, I don't know about you, but have any of you ever prayed all night for something? I mean, you know, do we do that? Do we really, with supplication, coming before the Lord, it's sort of in that sort of, no, I'm going to stay at this thing? Because it's interesting, Daniel says here in chapter 2, verse 19, during the night the mystery was revealed to Daniel in a vision, and then Daniel praised the God of heaven. And so we're looking for pieces here and parts of how do we respond when life comes at us in a very difficult way. And so he worships God, but first of all, let's look at what he does. He first of all praises God for who he is. And if you think about the prayer that we use every week here is our Father who is the Lord's Prayer. And we begin, our Father who art in heaven, or even our Father. What does that say? Just simply those two words, our Father who has provided for us, who cares for us, because it's that idea of Father, of Daddy, of Papa. And yet I know in our human relationships sometimes our earthly fathers maybe haven't been the best dads for us. At the same time, our Heavenly Father goes beyond all that. And Daniel says what? And we're just going to look at what he did. So chapter 2, verse 20. Praise be to the name of God forever and ever. Wisdom and power are his. I mean, if you remember the Ten Commandments, number 3 is what? You know what number 3 is? Huh? No, don't take God's name in vain. Okay. Don't use God's name in vain. Why? Why do we not want to use God's name in vain? I mean, this is our Father. And I'm hoping you don't. There may be moments as a teenager, maybe, that you use your father's name in vain, your earthly father. But, you know, see, even who we are in Christ, the promises that we have as his sons and daughters, that he wants the best for us. And that's something that Daniel, even in the Old Testament, understood very clearly. So what's so important about God's name? You know, in the Hebrew Bible, you can't even say God's name. When the Hebrews write the word Yahweh, they don't even spell it out. It's not supposed to be spoken because it's the most personal name of God, because it's that intimate relationship. God's name represents his character. It's who he is. He's reliable. He keeps his promises. And what? A good name is worth everything, right? And then the second thing, beyond praising God for who he is, we need to honor God for what he does. Now, I love this. Daniel says this in chapter 2, verses 21 and 22. I mean, this is extraordinary. What? God, he changes times and seasons. He disposes kings and raises up others. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to the discerning. He, God, reveals deep and hidden things. He knows what lies in darkness, and light dwells with him. Again, Daniel is reading this to himself and coming to deep understanding because he's getting ready to go tell the king some things that he's not sure how the king's going to respond. And it's just amazing that he takes confidence in this. And then as we worship God, we worship him and praising him who he is and then what he does for us, but then we also need to thank him for helping us. I mean, it's amazing. The next verse, what does Daniel do? He says, I thank and praise you, God, of my ancestors. You have given me wisdom and power, and you have made me known. You have made known to me what we asked of you, and you have made known to us the dream of the king. This is extraordinary, and it's important for us to see because it grounds us in those moments. And so, okay, you may not be asking something from the king, but there are certain things that maybe you're asking from God to help you understand in life's mystery and life's messiness. And then the seventh point is use what God shows me to save others. In other words, when God shows up in your life, it isn't meant for you to hang on to. And that's this idea of evangelism, that the whole purpose of when we come into a saving relationship with Jesus Christ, it's not meant for us to hold on to it and do our holy huddles. That there's a responsibility that we each have to get outside the building and create relationships with people who are not in the church, to create opportunities for them to know the confidence so that when life comes at them and smacks them upside the head, they don't lose their way. They don't lose their sense of who they are. Now, that doesn't mean it isn't going to be complicated, and it doesn't mean that life isn't going to be messy in those moments, because we've all been there. At the same time, we have to have the confidence that God is going to show up. Because you can see how Daniel, in fact, I would argue that even Daniel would make a great movie, and I don't think anybody's quite done it yet, just to see. And we're only in chapter 2. This is going to be amazing as we lean into the rest of this. But Daniel goes on to say what? Then Daniel went to Antioch, whom the king had appointed to execute the wise man. So he's going to go talk to the guy who's going to be his executioner. And he says to them, what? Don't execute anybody. I've got it. Take me to the king, and I will interpret the dream for him. Now, for Daniel to say that, there has to be amazing confidence in his life. Because he knows that if what he interprets isn't correct or isn't clear, then all of a sudden it's going to get really complicated for him. See, this is the tension of that God isn't just interested in saving you. God's actually interested in using you to save others. And I think that's the journey that we have to continue to lean into. And so then the story continues. Daniel 25:26, then Arioch rushed Daniel to the king and said, I have found one of the captives from Judah who can tell your dream and the meaning of it. And the king said to Daniel, is it true? I mean, the king's like, remember, this is sort of a nightmare. It's been reoccurring in his journey, and he's trying to understand it. And so he really wants to know, and he says, is it true? You can interpret this. And can you tell me my dream and also what it means? And Daniel's reply gives us the final step of what we need to do. You need to point people to God. Because here's what's interesting. Give God all the credit. What does Daniel do? Look at this. This is just amazing to see this. Daniel replied, "No wise man, no enchanter, magician, or diviner can explain to the king the mystery he has asked about." And then what? "But there is a God in heaven." That's probably the most important verse in the Bible. I mean, in the moments that I've had over these last few weeks to be at the hospital, to be with people in a season of life that's very complicated, I need to hang on that truth. I need to hang on the truth that there is a God in heaven who understands it all, and even when I don't understand it, that he does. And as a person, not just a pastor, but as a person, I need to have that confidence that I can lean into whatever's ahead of me. Now, what does God do? He reveals the mysteries. He has shown King Nebuchadnezzar what will happen in days to come. Your dream and the visions that passed through your mind as you were lying in bed are these. This is just boldness on Daniel's part. "As your majesty was lying there, your mind turned to things to come, and the revealer of mysteries showed you what is going to happen. And as for me, this mystery has been revealed to me, not because I have greater wisdom than anyone else alive, but why? So that you will know. So that you, King, you will know, your majesty may know the interpretation, and that you may understand what went through your mind." I mean, this is just an amazing segment of scripture to sort of lean into in these moments when we don't know, to have confidence that God does know. What an amazing witness. And again, this is a kid who's 17 years old. He doesn't take the credit. Instead, he does what? He points to God. He says, "I don't know, but there is a God in the heavens that does know." This is true evangelism. If you have been given success, it's a platform to point people to God. So our generosity as a church, the things that we get to do, these are gifts to us as Americans because of what God wants us to use to do for the world. And that's why we have the issues we're working through with immigration, because everybody wants to come here. Why? Because of the opportunities here. But those opportunities are grounded in a worldview that, like we talked about last week, that are grounded in the understanding that there is a God in the heavens that's in control. Now, I just want to save a little bit of time here, but it's important because it will lean into, so let me just, this is sort of the formal end of the message, but I just want to tell you about the dream because it's important. And so I really don't have any scriptures on the screen for this. There's 16 verses from Daniel chapter 2 through from 31 through 46, and I would encourage you to look at these later in the week, where Daniel says, "God showed me the dream you keep having, and he also told me the meaning of it. So in your dream you saw a giant," and this is what Nebuchadnezzar saw, "a statue of a man, and the head was made of gold, and the chest and arms silver, and the midsection and thighs bronze, and the legs iron, and the feet were a combination of iron and clay. But then a giant rock cut from a mountain by supernatural means strikes the feet of the iron and clay and smashes them into bits. The whole statue comes crushing down and is destroyed. And then the wind blew all the pieces away without a trace. And then the rock that knocked the statue down became a great mountain that covered the whole earth." Now, here's the meaning. God is showing you that the empires that will come and go after you. And so it's amazing how he sort of walks through this, and we know this to be true historically. "The gold head is your empire, Nebuchadnezzar. That's the Babylonian empire. The silver arms and the chest will be a weaker kingdom after you. We call that the Medo-Persian empire that came after them. The bronze stomach and thighs will be the third empire to rise, which is the Greek empire, right? And then the fourth is the iron legs and the feet, and the most powerful of all empires, the Roman Empire." But tell me, does the Roman Empire exist today? Nope. It's just a footnote in history. "But it will eventually be divided, some parts strong as iron, others weak as clay, and they don't mix well. But the rock that crushes everything else is this. God is coming to set up his kingdom." So even in this story in Daniel chapter 2, we have the promise of God's kingdom being established on earth. And so we preach. We each week we come together and we hear the word proclaimed, and then we, somewhere in the service, we use the Lord's Prayer to pause us in a moment, and one of those verses within the Lord's Prayer is what? "Thy kingdom come." Because I don't know about you, but I'm tired of brokenness in our community. I'm tired of people who can't live out of their fully giftedness because of the sin that's in their life. But see, that's the promise of the kingdom, and that's what we're called to be a part of. Now, the promise here in Daniel is that it'll never be destroyed, no one will ever conquer it, it will last forever, and that's how history will end, and you can count on it. Nothing will keep that from happening. That's just an amazing witness. And then what's amazing, as Daniel lays this out to the king, and this is sort of the end of the message for this morning, is at the end of chapter 2, verses 46 through 47, a pagan king admits to Daniel that Daniel's God is the true God. So the king, Nebuchadnezzar, says, no, your God is really in charge. And so there's this thing that we need to be reminded of, that when things are impossible in our life, if we're willing to trust that God is in the midst of it and start with that as a foundational understanding, it doesn't mean we aren't going to go through messiness to get to the resolution, but it does mean that as we lean into that and as God continues to show up, that we can see his blessing, and we don't want to miss that. And so when you think about your own story, a big deal or a big contract or, you know, whatever, a house full of kids, whatever it may be, the whole family leaning into a season, because it's just the beauty of life and yet the tension of life and the reality of life. And so with that, let me pray and continue with the morning.